She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And as I promise with every show, I am going to give you a lot to think about through the voice of our guest. It's going to be a great show. Just shut off all electronic devices, sit down, focus, and you'll be glad you did. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of the Chapman Automotive Group, who are doing their share and showing they care through the important work of their community green team. And they also sell some of the greenest cars on the market today, receiving lots of awards for their building strategies. We thank them for their support and for all they do every day to make our community and our planet more sustainable. Thank you, Chapman Tucson. You can visit them at chapmantucson.com for more information. So the name of our show today is Making Green Happen. And it's all about someone who has done just that and who is making a significant contribution to the health of our planet through her important work and the work of her dynamic team. Please join me in welcoming Deborah Fleischer, founder and president of Green Impact. She has over 25 years of success helping leading organizations make a meaningful green impact. Her holistic sustainability approach combines high-level strategic thinking, telling a great story, values-based communications, and employee engagement. Her background includes a master's in environmental studies from Yale and a master's in public relations from Harvard. So let's say it, she's no slacker. She's also a painter and an avid hiker, to know a little bit about her personal life. And after spending time with Deborah last week, getting to prepare for the show, I can promise you that she and her team are all that and really are making green happen. Deborah, welcome. A little bit of a long introduction, but you deserve it.
Wow, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes, we have lots to change the world about, we decided after our talk last week. So the best way, I think, to start always is to learn a little bit more about you. You're the founder. You are the force behind everything that's going on at Green Impact, and tell us a little bit about your journey and how it came about that you are the founder of Green Impact.
Sure, I'll tell you a little bit about how I ended up starting Green Impact. And it actually all went back to about 1990 when I found myself involved in a fight to protect a grove of monarch butterfly trees. I was working for an environmental consulting firm in San Francisco and had been asked to manage a big project on a coastal bluff in Santa Barbara. And it was this amazing property, and one thing that was really amazing about it is the monarchs migrated to the site every year in the fall and early winter. So the monarch butterfly groves, there were native grasslands and vernal pools and amazing views. The developer wanted to put luxury homes on the whole property, and my job was to try and make the project better. And we ended up recommending the project be scaled back and clustered development and a nice buffer from the monarch butterfly trees so that the butterflies could continue to migrate each year. And the developer was furious, like really furious, and I got really nasty calls, and it was just very stressful, and it ended up being in court for many, many years.
Did you win? I have to know if you won.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Finish the story.
Patience, Mrs. Green.
So out of that experience, I ended up feeling really dissatisfied with my work, and I was really questioning, is my work making a difference? I was feeling like I was just making bad projects a little less bad. And so out of my desire to have work that made a bigger difference, I started Green Impact. And as you so wonderfully described, I now work with companies, universities, and nonprofits and I help them bring their commitment to sustainability alive, and I'm about moving organizations more into action. And I, you know, I just was really struck last year, like the Pope came out with his new environmental encyclical and was saying climate change is real and now is the time to take action. And then as you have on your Facebook page, Leonardo DiCaprio in his acceptance speech at the Academy Awards was saying climate change is real and now is the time to take action. And so I'm helping companies take action by helping to design, launch, and promote new green initiatives.
And, you know, it's so, to me, you talk about two big names. Pretty much everyone in the world probably knows who the Pope is, regardless of their religion. He's a big name. He's in the news all over. He's doing lots of things globally. And from where I sit, he's the only high-profile global leader talking about sustainability, up to and including all of our presidential candidates. It's not on the topic of, you know, the top of mind for all of the debates. So that's inspiring and encouraging, and people are listening. And then you have Leonardo DiCaprio, and I was telling you when we chatted a little bit earlier, I was cheering when he made that speech. Of course I was. It's like, this is so relevant. It is the single most important action. He had over 17 million views of that speech on video. Knowing that and what you do, does it help? Does it help when Leonardo DiCaprio says, this is what we better be paying attention to, folks? It's really important.
You know, for me, I don't know if that's what helps, but I now want to tell you the surprise ending to my monarch butterfly story, which does relate to this.
I want to hear
which is, the surprise ending was that years and years later, the project was protected by a local land conservation group, and the development didn't happen, and the monarchs get to return to the site every year. And the lesson for me, a really important lesson, is that we can't really know the impact of our actions. You know, we can't really know the impact of our actions, but we can act on our commitment to create a greener, healthier world. And so Leonardo, I think, was just inspiring us to all think about how can we in our own lives, in our own companies, in our own communities, take action. I don't know if him alone saying that's going to change the world, but it was pretty amazing that he took his bandwidth during his speech. And I thought he was really articulate.
And the important thing for me is that there's a part of this that's simply about raising the consciousness and keep the conversation going. That's, to me, the value in him saying that, because lots of people were watching and they were listening. And maybe, you know, if 1,000 people thought, oh, yeah, he's right, what else can I be doing? It has an impact. So you're right, you can't measure it. But to me, his saying it, and he's doing a lot of other really important work and putting his money where his mouth is with his foundation, really impactful long-term work.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that the Pope's encyclical was going to have a much bigger impact than it did, but Leonardo's speech is getting way more play on social media than the encyclical got.
Kind of sad. Kind of sad.
But, we have a true world leader in an actor, right?
Yes, and yeah, but let's not even go there. But it's like, it's okay. But Hollywood does have a role, and they do help bring about change, and they do help get policies, you know, changed, and people's mindsets. It's like, what's the cool kids doing? And it's really sad. But if he's helping people take action or have a greater impact, go Leo. It's like, I want his phone number.
No, so, he's making it more visible, and he's reaching people that might not normally hear the message, just like, you know, the Pope was reaching a lot of Catholics who, I guess, over half don't yet believe that climate change is, you know, is a man-made phenomena. So having different speakers speak it to different audiences that might not hear it is definitely
very
important.
Very clear about that. In the intro, in my intro to you, which is also relevant to this and measuring impact, I loved that you have the phrase in your philosophy, holistic sustainability. It's a place from which you come. What does it mean what is this integration of thought? How do you apply this philosophy or approach to your work?
Well, my holistic sustainability framework has come out of a number of different client initiatives where I saw that a lot of times people will say, I'm going green, I'm doing sustainability, but it's very focused on green operations and facilities, so it's all very behind the scenes, and oftentimes it's invisible to a lot of people. So I feel like holistic sustainability has a more integrated approach where it's also looking at how are you being socially responsible and how are you engaging your employees to get more on board with sustainability initiatives. And then how are you telling your success stories and promoting your best practices out to the world? So it's sort of trying to take what's sometimes very internal and behind the scenes and make it more visible to both your employees and the broader world.
Right, right. And I'd love to segue with that, using those six tenets, to talking about a real project you're working on. And I just want to, I forgot to ring the bell when you talked about the monarch butterflies. I love to ring the bell occasionally. It's like, yes, she did it for the monarch butterflies.
Because it's
really important. I love the bell. I'm going to keep the bell forever. It's part of my calling card. But anyway, you're working with USF, the University of San Francisco, which is a Catholic school.
Jesuit.
Okay, make sure. Yeah, those Jesuits would get you on that one. That's so true. I went to 12 years of Catholic school, so I get that. So talk about that. What are you doing with them, and how are you applying these? You know, you say, see the big picture. What did they engage you to do? And tell us about what you're doing with them.
Sure. Well, University of San Francisco was an interesting client because, just like I described, they were doing a lot of amazing things in the world of green operations and facilities, and they were just starting to launch their Office of Sustainability. So they brought me in to try and help them figure out how should we launch this office, how can we make our successes more visible, how can we get faculty, staff, and students more engaged. And so, yeah, I have sort of a six-step process I go through, and they're a great example of how it was applied. So the first step was, I really always try and encourage people to step back. Like, there's always this rush to want to move right into action, right, but to step right back, look at the big picture. I did a lot of interviews with students and faculty and really tried to suss out, you know, what are the challenges, what are the opportunities. I'm a big believer in, there's a book called Adaptive Leadership by Ronald Heifetz, and uh-huh, someone I studied with in graduate school, and it's more about being very strategic about how are you trying to shift values and who are your allies in doing this and what are some of the potential challenges and trying to get a sense of how much are you ready to rock the boat.
Right, right.
And what USF was really ready to do and wanted my help with was to engage faculty, staff, and students and help get the story of what they were doing out and more visible. So a lot of times I see strategies being done, climate action plans being done, they go on a shelf and nothing happens. So right, the second step, I am a partner with, and I hold people's hands and I'm like, okay, we're moving into action. And that's getting very specific over the next 6 months. What are your opportunities? How can you be more socially responsible? How can you be greener? Do you need to get your governance in place? With USF, it was very much, how are we going to communicate this better? How are we going to engage faculty, staff, and students? And so what the next step we did is really looked at how we were going to message it and around tapping into their core values. So USF is about change happens here.
Okay.
And we sort of morphed on that to green happens here. And then they have a core value around faith and stewardship. And so we were able to really tap into this idea of we're part of nature, we're not separate from it, and had our messaging and brand sort of reflect that.
Right.
And then I moved into a lot of different campaigns for them about how to make sustainability more visible. And we did a video, and we did a brochure, and we did website content and success stories. And, you know, all of that just helped take some of the things they were doing behind the scenes that was pretty invisible and make it more tangible.
Okay. So it's really, is safe to say it's like begin with the end in mind? This is the vision, this is the big picture, and then putting steps in place to, you know, create the change that you would love to see happen based on that vision?
Yes, and then I think the trick is how do you message it so people can hear it? So for UC San Francisco, which is more health-based, we've really messaged things around health and that a healthy planet means healthy patients. Or with when I'm working with Mattel, they have such a culture of play. How can we rift off play? But, you know, we're trying to find words that people might resonate with. So one of the videos we produced for USF is called Beloved in Nature, and it really coincided with the Pope's encyclical, and the president of USF was really speaking about the responsibility of stewardship and stewarding the earth. And when we had the launch for the office, this was something I was really fun. We had all the students answer the question, I love the earth because,
right,
and had their picture taken behind a cool backboard, and it was put on, you know, Facebook and Instagram, and, you know, again, just making it more alive and more visible. And I love the fact that I had a client where I could use the word love in things.
I love
and that,
that
we were using the word using the word God, which I thought was really unusual.
Yes, not being afraid to say that. Yes. But let's talk about that video, because I did look at it, and I'm glad that you sent it to us, and it hits on so many points that touch my heart, and it's Father Paul Fitzgerald, who's the president of the University of San Francisco. And I would like you to speak a little bit to what he talks about as the sustainability divide, because I'm sure you see that in your work. He talks about it's not just between the human race and the rest of many species. It's within the human race. And I don't call it the sustainability divide. I'm going to now, but I call it the great divide, because climate change will have a greater impact on some of us much more than it will others. Can you just talk about a little bit? It was an excellent video, 4.5 minutes, and I will share it on my Facebook page. It's excellent. I think I already did, actually, but I will make sure it's excellent.
Well, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio mentioned it in his comments, and Father Fitzgerald mentioned it in the video, the fact that those way less fortunate than us are going to feel the impacts of climate change the hardest, and that is pretty powerful to show visually. Sometimes trying to, a picture's worth a thousand words,
yes.
Seeing someone walking, you know, looking for water when it's just a dry desert as far as you can see, or, you know, flooding happening, it was a way to make the connection that our actions might not directly affect us as much, depending on where you live, but that it can really affect others. So that does motivate some people, especially if you have more of a stewardship, trying to be a good steward of the world value.
He was really good. I mean, he was really good. He spoke to your heart, and he talked about not just, you know, the sustainability divide. He's like a hashtag waiting to happen. That's what I think about. It's like I think in hashtags, which is kind of sick. But he said sustainability and environmental justice. I think about social justice as it relates to sustainability. And he did. He very much said our responsibility for the care of the planet and reassessing our relationship with nature. I mean, are we here to dominate it, take advantage of it, use up all its resources, or to live as a part of nature? And if people start thinking about that, it makes so much sense to think about sustainability and environmental justice, to me.
Right, and to have that message come from the president was really important and key. So that's one of the steps is how can you model and get support from senior management. And he just happens to be so incredibly articulate, but we were really excited when we were able to get him involved in the video.
He was really, and he needs to really promote that. They need to get those students liking it so it lights up on YouTube. Anyway,
I wanted the Pope to tweet it. I haven't succeeded in that yet. Pope, if you were listening, Pope Francis.
I will ask my social media person, my magical Lauren, to hashtag to tag the Pope and hashtag that. Okay, we're on our first break, everybody. Good times happen and fly when you're having fun. Everybody stay here with me, enjoying a great interview with Deborah Fleischer, founder and president of Green Impact. More great stuff to come. Please don't move.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us. Just another quick shout out to the Chapman Automotive Group for helping to make this show possible. To find out more about them and their role as leaders in sustainability, please visit them at chapmantucson.com. And I just want to note, because I know I have members of the Green Team that listen to this show, there was a press conference last week about all the work that Chapman is doing, and they planted 1,000 trees for Tucson, and they work with other great organizations like Goodwill and Habitat for Humanity and the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society. So this is an organization. Someone asked me about my relationship with Chapman, and I'm so proud of it because this is an organization that really is putting into action what it means to be good stewards of the community, which then benefits the planet. So that's my little shout out to them, and I'm going to tell them all they better listen to this show. Anyway, the name of our show today is Making Green Happen, and it's all about someone who really is doing just that and is making a significant contribution to the health of our planet through her work and the work of her dynamic team. Join me once again in welcoming Deborah Fleischer, founder and president of Green Impact. And Deborah and her senior team of communications and engagement pros, and I loved how that was written, offer a rare combination of skills. And I just thought it was important enough to do a shout out about this. High-level strategic thinking, the ability to tell a great story. People want to hear great stories, and expertise in sustainability, communications, and engagement campaigns. Green Impact helps companies, universities, and NGOs bring their commitment to sustainability alive. And in talking to Deborah, every time I talk about her, I'm already recruiting her for my national advisory board when that happens. So it's like this has been a very good conversation and developing relationship. So stay tuned for more on that. Okay, you mentioned a number of things in the first part of the interview, and I want to go into some of them a little bit more. So let's talk about UCSF and what you're doing with them. It's a topic really of importance to me, and it's about the impact of health when you're talking about issues affecting the planet. So what are you doing with UCSF?
I first started working with UCSF a couple years ago when they started a new sustainability website hub. So they're another example of a group that is doing a lot of amazing sustainability efforts and wanted their community to know more about it. So one of the things I've been doing for them over the last couple of years is creating success stories, website content, and a sustainability video for them. So we acknowledge, like, I'll pick up stories about what their different green champions are doing. Or this month, actually, we did a piece on K-cups, which could be like, you know, K-cups are those little coffee inserts that, like, wrap around the world 13 times every year. We use so many of them. So just trying to raise awareness of different sustainability issues and how employees can live their own lives greener and also be more effective at work in helping UCSF reach their sustainability goals. Since they're part of the UC system, they are aiming for zero waste and they're going to be carbon neutral.
Wow.
And I just did for them their annual report that kind of highlighted some of the best practices they're doing. So just trying to take their successes. Like, one of the things I think is amazing they do is they reprocess their single-use devices at the medical center, which could sound kind of gross, I guess.
No, but that's amazing, though. Talk about
waste. And it amazes.
Oh.
Yeah, and it, let's see, I have the fact here because it saves them over $1 million a year and diverts over 44,000 pounds of waste. And I'm just always amazed that, like, every hospital and medical center isn't doing it. Kaiser does it, but it's still gaining acceptance as a best practice.
So just let me press pause here for a minute. How does it save them money? And what was the figure that you quoted? I can never write fast enough. 44,000 pounds of waste.
1.04 million in savings.
Right.
And 44,000 pounds of waste.
44,000 pounds of waste by disposing of single-use items?
So instead of disposing of them, they work with two companies, Stryker and Hygieia,
okay,
who reprocess them, sterilize them, repackage them. So these are devices that are completely usable a second time if they're
right,
properly processed.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, it's
and
just,
I don't really have a whole lot to do with setting that program
right,
up, but
right.
I help promote it. One of the other things they do that I think everyone should do is they have negotiated a contract with their recycled paper supplier that 100% recycled paper is cheaper than virgin or 30%. So they've partnered with UC Berkeley to do this because they have enough buying power to bring the price down. But a lot of large organizations could be doing the same thing. So that's one of my pet peeves is these little things, but cumulatively, you're like saving a lot of trees. So doing some communications to the buyers and the employees so they know when it's time to buy paper that they should be buying the 100% recycled, that there is no cost premium anymore.
But when you go to that place, and I mean, my book that I wrote is all about small steps, big impact. And if 10 universities did this, then it would be 440,000 pounds, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
millions of dollars. And it, to me, it's always not just that carbon footprint impact that we measure, but the shipping and the packaging and the, you know, the beat goes on and on and on of the dirty, I'm sure it's a horrible manufacturing process. I don't know much about it, but it's a ripple effect when you take a step like that that can be so amplified with more partners. So I
right,
think it's really great.
And they have created some partnerships to try and get antibiotics out of their meat at the medical center. I mean, it's always amazing
wow,
to me that 80% of antibiotics that are used in agriculture are actually for what they call non-therapeutic uses, just to keep animals healthy in sort of crowded living conditions. So because UCSF is so committed to health worldwide, they've started to reduce the amount of red meat they're serving in order to pay for sourcing beef that is grass-fed and raised without antibiotics. And they're only serving antibiotic-free chicken. And it's really hard to do. So they've created
yes,
like a collaborative procurement with a bunch of other medical centers to create the demand so that the suppliers will carry enough of the product. So it's complicated once they start trying to shift the whole system, but like you said, if you get enough partners and you increase your purchasing power, you can really make a difference.
You hit on a really, really important point that has been talked about many times on the show. When people say it's more expensive to eat X, well, if you cut down on the amount of red meat you have in your budget, you can be shocked by how many more organic vegetables and organic produce and organic, you know, USDA certified organic meat. Because you're right, if you cut down on the amount you're eating, then the budget item goes down and there's more room for healthier choices. So it's very inspirational for me that you say that, and a great reminder for me and all of our listeners. It's a budget item. But this is like almost another bell ringer, but I rarely ring the bell twice in one show.
Oh.
It's so good. It's so important. This is the beginning of what could be a tipping point, because other hospitals are, A, looking to save money, and the forward-thinking ones are looking at prevention. You know, Tucson Medical Center here in Tucson, their whole focus as a hospital, as a community-owned hospital, is about prevention and how we can keep people out of the hospital, not treat sick people. So this is a great way. Less red meat and healthy meat when you serve it.
Yeah, I mean, one easy call to action for all of us is if you do buy meat, to buy organic meat, because then you're assured that there are no antibiotics used in it. And UCSF's theme for this coming fiscal year is really focused on a new campaign that I'm not producing, but I'm going to be help promoting it, around health and sustainability. And their sustainability video, which I didn't send you, is sort of a spoof. There's a patient being rushed into the operating room, and we got to film it in their mock operating room. And you can't quite tell who the patient is, but, you know, like plastic water bottles are being pulled out, and the doctor is Dr. McGreeny. And we tried to use humor to show that, you know, a lot of times the doctors are like, saving the world isn't my responsibility. And then we have, you know, a doctor holding the earth in his hand saying, well, then whose responsibility is it?
I love it. Yes, so. It's really, really important. And I do want you to send me the video. We have just such a robust and active and engaged Facebook page. I'm not a big Facebooker other than my mission-based Facebook page for Mrs. Green's World, but it's so affirming to me how many people read it and comment and share it. So that's something that I do want to help share and spread the good green word about. And I'm just, I think I'm having way too much fun. But when you are, is part of what you're working on with them, what I would say is one of the biggest challenges, a healthy planet does mean healthy patients. There is a connection. But how do you start to begin? Where do you begin to crack old behaviors? And what are they doing that's different as agents for change at UCSF?
Well, they do have a very strong governance system in place with working groups, and they have representatives from both the medical center and the campus side. So high-level leadership involvement. They have an annual Living Green Fair that's gotten very energized and well-attended, that just provides information on a whole range of different green issues. They have an annual award ceremony that last year was really vibrant. The chancellor actually was giving the awards for different green champions who are making a difference. They have this sort of this momentum where it's not just a one-off. It's like every year, every quarter, there's campaigns and messaging and posters and finding. They have a green office lab certification program, so a lot of the offices have gone through a process to look at how they can reduce waste, reduce energy, reduce water use, so trying to get the employees more engaged.
So in two different, very, very different worlds, the worlds of universities and colleges, and then the world of medical treatment and medical centers, how does what they're doing impact their brand, and do they care about it? I can speak for the University of Arizona. They care very much about letting prospective students know that they are leaders in sustainability. Same with Arizona State University. Very important branding strategy for them. And not just branding strategy, but they're doing things that are very integrated. What about the two universities you're working with, and then, you know, your client for I lost my train of thought. I was thinking about all of USC and what they're doing. But when you're working with an organization like USC, California, and their health initiatives, does it help their branding? Do they care about that?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, USF and other undergraduate universities are ranked now by groups like Sierra Club about who's the coolest, greenest campus. I believe UC Irvine was in the top five this year. So by doing these programs, and if you do it all behind the scenes and don't tell anyone, you're not going to rank as well.
Right.
And students, a lot of students do care about wanting to go to a university that either offers sustainability-related programs or is putting, you know, some talk into action. So I think for the undergraduate universities, that's they're definitely interested in that recognition. I mean, UCSF just launched a brand new medical center at Mission Bay, and it's three of the buildings got LEED Gold certification.
Wow.
So
wow.
That's great bragging rights.
Great,
and they just got named.
Rights.
They got named one of the top green hospitals by the Becker Review of Hospitals, and I believe it's Practice Green Health gave them an award of one of the top 25 greenest hospital. So these are all, I think, bragging rights that are just part of what is really important to them is that they're providing the most excellent health care and they're about improving health worldwide. So this is like part of their bigger mission, and I do think it's important to them.
And so it comes up. I mean, it really, I think it's more and more and more coming up, and that's my always my hope. And when you talk about, let's just segue a little bit to the concept of change and systemic change. And I don't know if there's an answer to this, but I certainly want to know your thoughts on it. When you're working with very large institutions, ones that are possibly steeped in tradition, how do you work towards bringing about lasting change, more systemic change, and that it's not just like a campaign? Is that something you feel comfortable addressing, and what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question so many people are trying to figure out, and I think it gets back to my six steps
yes.
that I sort of focus on. So
yes.
I think for lasting change, you really need to be strategic and understand that you're trying to shift values and that you're going to get pushback and gaining the right allies to implement initiatives. And I think part of the lasting change is moving into action and then making it really visible to your employees, to your customers, incorporating it into your marketing and your communications, into your packaging.
All of that matters. It all comes up. And you know, it leads to the whole conversation about what is the importance of, people ask this of me all the time. So what's the answer? What's the solution? What can we do? Filthy fashion. There's this. There's too much food. There's that, you know, all of the reduce, reuse, recycle. I am recycling. And to me, I ask people to get very quiet and I say, just remember that the first R is reduce. And Father Fitzgerald said it in his conversation as well. It's like, yes,
yep.
Reduce. We have to think about reducing recycle, reduce, reuse, recycle. But the first R, for those of us that are making the greatest impact or putting the most weight on the planet, is not reduce the first thing that we have to talk about in painting a big picture?
Yeah, and I think it's really linking to this growing movement around mindfulness and really trying to remember
yes.
what's important and not trying to fill your unhappiness with stuff. And I think that's one of the messages that Father Fitzgerald was really eloquent in talking about. It's a hard sell to tell people to reduce, and that's where it gets to trying to have fun, friendly competition kind of ways, especially in the work setting, to get people to remember their mugs and remember their water bottles and remember their bags and all those little things that I forget to do sometimes.
Very hard. I could not agree with you more. My daughter, my youngest daughter, was talking to me about shopping because I'm really on this filthy fashion kick, and it's so much of our clothing is literally made by slave labor. I mean, that is not a shocking, oh yeah, here's a big news flash. It is. Working conditions, deplorable. Health conditions, deplorable. Hours, salaries, the chemicals they're exposed to. And she said to me, you know, Mom, what am I supposed to do? She lives in a small town. And I said, you know, get by with less, go to Goodwills and secondhand stores when you can. We have, you know, Buffalo exchanges all over the country. It started here in Tucson. And I said, it's just rethinking Do you have to have a new outfit all day, you know, every time you go to work? Or can we get used to fewer outfits? It's a big mindset shift for our culture.
Yeah.
We're going to have to go to another quick break, which is like, it blows me away.
It's whizzing by.
I told you this is what happened. Time flies when you're having fun. And we come back. I would like you to talk a little bit about Mattel and small steps there and the work you're doing with Pacific Land Trust and a little bit more about you and how you're showing up in the world and the important work of Green Impact and how to stay connected. So everybody, stay here with me. We've got more fun with Deborah Fleischer from Green Impact. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. The name of our show today is Making Green Happen, and it's all about someone who is doing just that. She is making green happen with her and her dynamic team, and in turn making a significant contribution to the health of our planet through her important work and the work of her dynamic team and the people that she's working with. They're doing great things that benefit all of us. Please join me in welcoming Deborah Fleischer. She is the founder and president of Green Impact. She has for over 25 years success in helping leading organizations making a meaningful green impact. Her holistic sustainability approach, which I encourage all of you to go look at greenimpact.com. It combines high-level strategic thinking, telling a great story, and values-based communications, and how to engage employees. She helps people move from talk to action, which is where the whole game is, folks. It's like talk is cheap, action a little bit harder, by designing, launching, and promoting new green initiatives and helping companies, universities, and NGOs bring their commitment to sustainability alive. Thank you, Deborah, for taking this time to be with us.
Glad to be back.
And you know what I'd like to do is start by making sure we cover your website is greenimpact.com and your Facebook page is Green Impact Sustainability Group. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Green Impact on Twitter. And people like to know that. We've got a lot of Twitter action going always after these shows, so people, you can find out about her. And then another thing that I recommend, so that we're not rushing this at the end of the show, is signing up for your newsletter. Your blogs are great. They are relevant. They are time-sensitive, you know, timely. I got that thing up about Keurig, the...
The K-cups.
I mean, when that happened, my husband said, are you kidding me right now? What are they doing? These little cups that 100 million people drink coffee, and it's now, you know, you can consume your favorite beverage, and then what's wrong with the waste? It's like it's creating another big mess. But you can go to your impact page, Green Impact, and there's an easy way to sign up for your newsletter, and I did. I just want you to know I took action today.
Great. If you go to greenimpact.com, the newsletter sign up is right there. And when you sign up for the newsletter, you also get access to one of my white papers on some of the best practices for increasing engagement.
Yeah, and it's good stuff. Your blogs are good. I love the one about... I don't know how you got that green apple to look like the earth or whoever did that. That was a very, really good one. I love graphics. So it was like, yeah, you want to read this, how to eat healthy chocolate on Valentine's Day, things that really matter that we can do with our consumption and our purchasing power. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Mattel, because they're a giant. So what are they doing to move a little bit forward, and how are you helping them to move the green needle forward?
Well, I was thinking a little bit about your last question about, you know, how do you create, you know, real systemic change, lasting change? And in a company as large as Mattel that has a number of different brands, one thing that they wanted some help with and they brought Green Impact in for was engaging their employees. So they have their high-level corporate social responsibility programs going more at the corporate level, but they also have the American Girl brand under their umbrella, which has over 18 stores across the U.S.
Yes.
So we were brought in to create sort of ongoing momentum and programs for how do we empower the employees to be greener at work and also in their personal lives. So a lot of companies will start, it sounds like you're involved in some green teams.
Yes, yes.
So Mattel has their version of a green team. They're called SEEDS, S-E-E-D-S.
Love it.
And we have identified green champions at each store that are a lead, and then each month I'm giving them activity ideas, and we do quarterly phone calls to help share best practices and just trying to make it easier and more alive and fun for the employees who are really busy with, you know, a lot of other responsibilities to bring green alive in the stores. And one thing we're doing for Earth Month that's coming up that I'm really, you know, I'm really think a key thing is how do you message this so it doesn't sound like wah, wah, wah,
right,
you know, like
right.
Charlie Brown's teacher. So we got really playful this year. And again, one thing I love about Mattel is you get to be playful, and came up with a green superhero theme. And we put together some really fun stuff because they have strong graphics. Like we have Agent Zero, who can reduce waste with a single touch and have all sorts of tips for how you can reduce waste. And we have Sparky, who can turn any item into a solar-powered device with a single glance, and ideas for how to reduce energy. And my favorite, we have Captain Wild, who can heal nature and restore habitats with a blow of a whistle. And so it's just, again, trying to be playful and come up with a theme that might actually capture people's attention. And we got very visually strong and kind of creative messaging that might actually get someone's attention when they're in the break room. And it's hard when you have facilities spread out all over the country. And, you know, we're also trying to reach distribution centers and manufacturing facilities throughout the world.
But you
said
to
scale,
some key words.
Creating a pro. Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. No, fun and creativity makes people
and
really
scalable.
Yes, and scalable. That's true. That's true. Really fun. I want to see some of that too. I want to do that. It's like that sounds really fun. But I think that it took quite a long time for me to grow a forceful help grow. I don't want to ever say it's me. At a dealership that has 7 dealerships all over the city, represents all kinds of different brands, and let's face it, they sell cars. So permeating that culture, it's like selling toys. I mean, how do you help with their stewardship and their global citizenship? And part of it was doing things that are fun. It's play matters, being playful and not making it be heavy and preachy and lecturing. I mean, who wants that? I personally
don't sign me up
for that.
You lose people with that.
Right, right. Know. And you know it's successful when people are recruiting other people to come on the green team and they're wearing their shirts to work. And it's like, you know, it's becoming a core value of that culture. And it's taken years, when, you know, back to the issue of longer-term systemic change. It's not a workshop. You know, it takes a lot more than that to make it happen. So what are they doing? So that's fun. And then the American Girl doll, tell us about that news.
Well, this is something I'm not involved with at all, but have just learned that every year American Girl has a doll of the year. I don't have kids, so I'm not that familiar
right.
with American Girl. But
I do.
The doll this year is Leia, and she is really about nature and protecting sea turtles and has a more environmental theme, which I was excited about.
It is exciting. I mean, it's great. And believe me, I have girls. And they, American Girl doll goes back to when they were little. And they all played with dolls. And they all have their American Girl dolls and their wardrobes. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a very expensive deal. But we were judicious in our purchasing. But it was a really good idea, whoever thought American Girl doll up. Because, you know, they put stories and history and there's ethnic diversity. I mean, it's pretty forward-thinking, if you ask me. I like it. I don't know anything about their manufacturing processes or anything like that, but I'm going to keep it as a happy memory for this mom. So, good for Mattel. That makes me really happy. Now, what about, you do a lot of work, it seems, from the research I've done, with public land trusts. What are you doing with the Pacific Land Trust or any of the ones that you want to talk about? What's your work in that area of focus?
Yeah, currently I'm working with two land conservation groups. One is the Trust for Public Land, and the other is the Pacifica Land Trust. And the Pacifica Land Trust is a very small, volunteer-based land trust just south of San Francisco. And we have a property that was quite impacted by off-road vehicles, motorcycles. There was a club that did a lot of motorcycle riding. So there's trails on it kind of going up and down things that you just think, how did anyone want to go up or down that? But it got really eroded. So we got a grant. Well, the Land Trust got a grant, and I'm helping them just sort of oversee the project to restore the habitat. And then we have a second grant to help make the trails more sustainable. So the trick with the project, though, is it's going to require a lot of volunteer hours to make happen. So volunteers helping to plant the plants and propagate the plants and take care of the property. Eventually, it's going to be transferred to San Mateo County Parks. But in the interim, the Land Trust is still managing the project. So it's always when the rubber hits the road, when you get into actually doing these projects, it can be quite challenging with getting the permits and all your funding in place, but we're moving it ahead.
Right, and all of it matters. I mean, restoring any land back to nature, to me, is all part of the really good news story that you're helping to move forward. And, you know, I have a couple of other questions that are kind of all over the place, but I think you can hang with me, kiddo. What do you really love to work on the most? Like, what really excites you when you're working with clients? Is it helping them paint the big picture? Is it engaging the employees or the students? What do you like to do that fuels your passion for green impact?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at a picture that's on my desk that says, we've had a sea of change at Sierra Point, and it was the Sonoma Land Trust, and I helped them with a land acquisition and restoration project of a historic bayland. And it took about 10 years, but last fall, they breached the levee and the water came rushing in. And I love driving by that site and knowing that I helped get it protected and restored back to wetland. So those kind of projects don't come along that often, but those probably feed my soul the most because they're connecting me to nature and sort of healing.
And the monarch butterfly story.
And the monarch butterflies in the Pacific.
Yes. So important. So important. Now, what about how do people find out about you most? Is there a way? Because I thought it was very exciting that on your website, I really did my homework, that people can actually call you or an organization or whatever for a free assessment, a half-hour free assessment. And what does that look like? Is it a vetting process? Is it a way to see if you're good partners? What happens in an assessment?
It's just an initial conversation where I can learn more about what the organization's challenges are and, you know, ask them some questions and help them get a sense of what, you know, key opportunities might be. And just sort of a mutual getting to know each other to see if it might make sense to work together.
And people hear about you through referrals from other clients. I mean, how does that happen? Because there's you know, you have the University of San Francisco, you have UCSF. How does the word spread about Green Impact?
You know, I would say 90% of my work is word of mouth.
Yes.
So one client mentions it to another. And more I do get some of my work. I got connected with USF through a Google search that he did. I think he searched for Bay Area sustainability consultants. And about four or five come up that are much sort of bigger and more corporate than I am. And he was drawn to working with a sort of a smaller, very hands-on, client-oriented
right.
shop.
Right. So it comes about in all ways. And is there, you know, what are some of the biggest barriers? I always like to ask, tell me what's tough when you're working with clients. Is it the student engagement or client-employee engagement part? What are some of the biggest barriers? Is it changing leadership? I mean, you get down in these organizations to bring about change. What are some of the big challenges?
Well, obviously, one of the big challenges I see is not putting enough resources to the problem in the projects.
Got it.
I got a call recently from a potential client. When I asked them what their budget was, they said $1,000. It's like, okay, well, I'm not your person.
That's like kind of sad, actually. But
yeah.
It is. I mean, it is, because it's, no, okay.
And I think turnover, you know, the right. chancellor at UCSF has changed since I started. I felt like she was originally a really, you know, green champion, and she's moved on. So it's, you know, especially in the retail setting, there's a lot of turnover. So that can be challenging. But I think the biggest challenge is, you know, you run into the silos that I know you've talked about.
Yes.
So if a facilities department is communicating about sustainability, suddenly the communications people are like, what are you doing?
Right.
Or the branding guidelines don't want you to have a green message. They want you to use the core message. So some of those messy issues can be challenging.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting, and I always wonder, you know, we have so many people that we want to interview, and I'd love to be on every day, and I found you somehow, and I'm really not sure. And I said to Kelly, how do we find her? This is really something I want to get into, because it's about...
I know, she wasn't sure.
I know. And then I go back to this, and we talked about it, and, you know, I'm really happy that I can make myself laugh, but the Green Teams Engaging Employees in Sustainability publication that I talked to you about, I did not have any idea that you were the author of that and that I would be interviewing you about this. I think that's
wow.
hysterical. I did not put that together until after you and I hung up. And I use that and share that with teams. And that is not where I heard about it, because I've been using that for 6 years. I mean, or
right.
5 years.
Right. That was
yes.
Yeah, that was a white paper I did with Green Biz, like I said, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
You know, it could have been Green Biz, because I certainly read their publication every day. But it's really incredible to me, in the world of small world syndrome, that is an excellent paper for anybody. And it is timeless. It's not out of date. It's timeless. How to engage
But
employees.
I do want to go back, because something just popped in my head about what kind of projects I really get excited about.
Take
and
it
I
away.
I get really jazzed about designing, launching, and promoting new initiatives. I am great at getting people off and running, and then a lot of times I leave, which is why I'm a good consultant.
Right.
So that's probably the thing that I'm most energized about. Is
and I could hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, let's get this started. And then that starts the ball rolling of impact. It's that small group of dedicated individuals. And I'm glad that you felt like you could chime in, but I want to say to people, go to Deborah's website. If you are an employee or an employer who wants to learn about how to engage employees in sustainability, your blog is excellent. It's fun. It's playful. It's relevant. There's some heavier duty stuff, but I think it's great. And we have about a minute left, and I want you to, I mean, here, this might be the only question that puts you on the spot. 1 minute. What would be the call to action that you would encourage listeners to take? One call to action. Do you have anything that flies into your head about what people can do to become engaged in green impact, making green happen?
You know, I think it's so much just looking at your life and making one or two changes that you feel excited about. So if it's shopping at the farmer's market, do that. If it's buying organic clothing, do that. If it's riding your bike to work.
Perfect answer. We're up against it. Deborah, thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was great to be here.
Stay tuned next week. Russ Beck from Tumbleweed Tiny Houses. You'll want to be there. Make it a great green week, everybody.